Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
O Knights of Nick, we have brought you your shrubbery. May we go now?
It is a good shrubbery. I like the laurels particularly. But there is one small problem.
What is that?
We are now no longer the knights who say Nick. We are now the knights who say... Therefore, we must give you a test.
What is this test, O knights of... knights who till recently said ni?
Firstly, you must find... another shrubbery!
Not another shrubbery!
Then, when you have found the shrubbery, you must place it here beside this shrubbery, only slightly higher, so you get a two-level effect with a little path running down the middle.
A path! A path! A path!
Then, when you have found the shrubbery, you must cut down the mightiest tree in the forest with a herring.
Written so poorly. It's not up to my usual standards. Can you be a dear and go get me some water, please?
You go,
oh, thank you.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by EcoLawn, the ultimate low-maintenance, drought-tolerant lawn, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Now here's the man who's greening your world one kilohertz at a time, Mike Novak.
Thank you, lovely Joe McArdle. Sad day here at Progressive Talk.
It is.
Joe McArdle is moving on. The voice of Chicago's Progressive Talk. And we wish him well. He's, gone to greener pastures.
I know. Yeah. I will definitely miss his Zaka Tacos, Paca Tacos.
I know. I'm keeping that. I'm sorry. That never changes.
It's a staple.
It's there now forever and ever. So, Joe McArdle, we may have to do a tribute to him next week because he's around here for a couple more weeks and I'm not sure what we'll do. Maybe I'll wake him. I know. I'll call him at 8 a.m. next Sunday.
Do it.
But you won't be here, Jessica.
I won't, but I think that it would be absolutely fantastic, and I would love to hear how grouchy he is.
Oh, he's grouchy when he's awake during the middle of the day. That's the way he rolls. Jessica Malina's here because Heather Fry, takes more days off than Johnny Carson.
Well, she deserves it.
No, she doesn't. I never get a day off. Well, how does Heather get, like, every other week? It seems like, it's a baptism. I gotta go. It's a
She's
wedding.
Important
it's
people.
So
she
important.
Has things
I
to
got
do.
A wedding. I got, I don't know.
Well, she's better than me because I'm just a loser who stays at home all the time. So.
Ah, okay. Well, Heather Fry is off. Jessica's here, so thank you. And you're normally with Jake, Awake with Jake, on Saturday mornings.
It's a bit different being around somebody who's not always jabbing at other people. It's fun.
Well, I can hit you from here. It's okay. I can do that. And I understand he's now doing a show segment about me.
He is doing one about you, which is pretty amusing. He pulls audio from your show, and he has people guess. It's much like You Don't Know Dick, only now it's a Do You Know Mike?
Right, because I don't have a name that...
Not snappy enough.
Not snappy enough. That's okay. Right. Works for me. You know, I'm not telling him my middle name. I'm not telling him any of the things I was called when I was growing up. I'm not telling him any
well,
of those
I
things.
Well, now I want to know. I want to know.
No. And see, I'm afraid to open my mouth here with you in the studio because I'm going to... If I look over there and you're writing down notes...
I'm texting him
I am ripping. I will throw your PDA against the wall if I have to. All right, whatever it is. He can listen to the whole show and pick out whatever he wants from the 2 hours. I don't want him. I don't want you doing his dirty work for him.
Well, I already have been.
Great. So wait a second. Is this am I being set up here?
Yes,
did Heather leave on purpose?
Just so
she really doesn't have
some dirt on you.
A baptism today?
No.
Just so you could sit in here and
I've been
cause
looking
trouble?
Through your mailbox and
I beg your pardon.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Hey, we got a lot going on in the show today. Always, as always, way too much booked. I hope you'll enjoy it, and you know, I hope you'll stick around with us. Before I tell you, actually, on the line right now, holding, and Lawless, I'll get to you in a second. Yes, his name is Lawless. Lawless Hawks. And he's tied into the big broadcast we had at 1 o'clock last Sunday at God's Harbor for All Souls in Matteson, Illinois, which I found out is the correct way to pronounce it.
I've always pronounced it Matteson.
Matteson. Well, I had a guy.
You had the caller who called in and said Matteson.
See, that's what the guy should have. That's what Jake should have used, which is the correct.
He wanted your composting info.
He wanted my composting info. I'm not talking about composting. I'm not going to. I know something weird is going to come out of this.
You can talk about deers.
You know I can. Or we could talk about giant pandas.
Which I'm really looking forward to.
Okay, we'll bring this article up sometime during the show because I came in, I had this article that I got this week that you're not going to believe. And I can't even, where's this from? This is from, I can't even tell where the article is from, but it's about giant pandas and what we should be doing with giant pandas. And that's all I'm going to leave it at that right now. And Jessica had known about this. So anyway, so Lawless is going to be with us because he was involved in the farm, the CETA-sponsored farm over at God's Harbor for All Souls in Matteson where we had our broadcast last Sunday. Lawless, I'll get to you in just a second. Rick DeMaio weather, of course, at 8:30 as always. There's changes a-brewing. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
I think September's about to end. And that's what I'll play. That's what I got to play later. Yeah, it's going to...
My tomato plants are huge, and I only have 4 tomatoes on them, and I was hoping that it would be an Indian summer where it was warmer for longer and not so much.
We'll ask Rick, but I don't think things are looking good for you. Bob Ehrlich is going to be here later. It's also getting to the end of the season for Monarch Watch. We talked to Bob several weeks ago, and this is a guy that's been raising monarchs in his garage and setting. He tags them and he sets them free.
Monarchs, like monarch butterflies?
Monarch butterflies.
Okay.
And he has set free 600 monarchs this year. And and I want to get the updated number from him, and we're coming to the end of the season. We'll talk to him later in this hour. Edith Macra from the Morton Arboretum will be here. Speaking of insects, there's a lot of bad monarchs are good ones. And there's a lot of bad ones out there, like emerald ash borer, like gypsy moth, like Asian longhorn beetle. And there's a symposium at the Morton Arboretum this Tuesday and Wednesday, which they're doing with U.S. Forest Service to talk about the economic, social, and environmental impact of invasive insects in our communities. And it's not just the insect geeks, the entomologists who worry about this. Obviously, if you have an ash tree, you got to worry that you're not going to have it in a few years, and other things, and other trees, and other plants. Edith is great. I've had her on the show a lot, not on this particular program, but back when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial, she would show up all the time. And I love having Edith. She's a wonder. She's the community trees advocate for the Morton Arboretum, and she'll be here. And then later, Steve Pincuspy from Safer Pest Control Project. They're having their Ladybug Bash at the end of this week, but we're going to talk about their natural lawn care workshops. And just, you know, the Safer Pest Control people are the ones who are trying to reduce the amount of pesticides that we use in our environment. We'll talk a little bit about natural lawn care because we're getting to the end of the season when you can actually get your lawn in the ground. If you haven't done it, now would be a good week because, I think Rick's going to tell us the cooler weather is on the way. And, it's still time. You can still do it. So that's all on the show. And giant pandas.
Yes!
Giant pandas. You know, that's the one he's going to go for. That's the one that Jake is going to go for.
Of course it is.
Is the giant panda thing. And then I'll say something stupid about giant pandas, and
I'll make you say something stupid. Watch out.
Okay. Did you lace my coffee with something?
Just GBL.
Okay. Don't even start that. All right. People don't even know what we're talking about, and it's just too scary. Let's go to line five.
Let me try calling him back.
All right. Get him back here. Hello. Look at that. All right. I was just going to tell you that the Urban Farm Report on the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by CETA, helping people, changing lives. And before we get Lawless back on the phone, I want to let you know that if you go to MikeNovak.net, if you go to ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com, both places, you can see photos of our event last week. If you go to ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com, and you can spell it either way and get to the same place. If you go www.chicagoprogressivetalk.com, you'll get the website. Or if you go to chicagosprogressivetalk.com, you will get the website. And there is a link to the broadcast. There are photos. There's the podcast of the entire hour we did out in Matson last week at God's Harbor for All Souls. If you go to my website, just above picture of Mom, and I told you last week, those of you were listening and some of you maybe didn't, Mom passed away the other week, and I've got a little tribute to her on my homepage of my website. And right above that is it says God's Harbor Farm, Urban Gardening, sponsored by CETA. And you can click to the podcast on WCPT's site, the Chicago Progressive Talk, or you can click to the slideshow. You should click to that slideshow if you get a chance, Jessica.
Okay.
From my homepage, and you'll see the lovely Heather and the lovely Joe McArdle and a bunch of other people who were out there that day. So let's go back to line five and bring in Lawless. Are you with us this time, Lawless?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, Mike. Can't complain.
It's early, I know, on a Sunday, and I really appreciate you getting up this early to be on the radio show.
No problem.
Lawless Hawks. Now, I have to ask you, Lawless, how did you get that name? Not your last name, but your first name.
Really not sure. I've heard the story of it being my father's name, and my grandmother liked it. It was a lawyer's name, named Lawyer Lawless, but it was his last name, so she gave it to my father as his first.
Wow, I love the idea that it's a lawyer's name. Now that's good.
Yeah, that is pretty fantastic.
That works pretty well for me.
Great person to be named after.
Yeah. And Lawless was one of the people who worked on the farm over at God's Harbor for All Souls in Matson. Now, how did you get involved with that this summer?
It was like a program, as you know, a volunteer program.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I wanted to put on my record because I planned on doing more, you know, so I planned on being a firefighter down the line, you know. So that's another thing I want to put on my resume, along with next getting the EMT training and, you know, going the whole nine.
And you thought that, you know, just having this, having worked with the church and having worked on this urban farm would be helpful?
Yes, something positive.
Now, how old are you, Lawless?
I'm 21 years old.
Are you in school now?
No, sir.
Okay. But I know that they brought in a lot of young people. Obviously, you're certainly compared to me, you're a young person. And the idea was to work the land there. What kind of stuff did they have you doing?
Well, first, it was pretty much just like a piece of land like any other, not maintenance, about a year. So the first thing we had to do, tear down all of the brush, all the little bushes that was out there. And after we got all of that gone, we went through a second time and took all of the roots out. Went one more time, turned the dirt over, and we was ready to get new soil and start planting.
And you know what? And you talk about it like it happened real easy, because I've been out there. I've seen the brush next to where you guys planted stuff, and it's pretty thick. That was a pretty grueling job, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. It wasn't easy. It took a week, sir.
And to rip it out, and as you say, then you had to go back and then get out all the roots.
Dig out most.
Did you dig them out? How'd you dig them out? With shovels or with?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness.
Deep down as they was, we had to go get them.
See, what you got to understand, folks, is that they didn't necessarily have a bobcat out there or a backhoe.
How many people were working on this? Because you said people were doing this for a week, digging out all the brush and the roots and things like that.
It was over a six-week period.
Though. Six weeks.
It started at, like, 40 people.
Wow.
Now, can I ask you, were you one of the people getting paid for this?
Yes, sir.
Okay, through the CETA funds. And then you got things cleared out, and you started planting. Had you ever planted anything before?
Never.
Never?
It was actually a great learning experience. It really was.
And
being able to work with the vegetables and really being able to work with the people.
Was it harder or easier than you thought it would be planting all these? I'm looking at the pictures right now on the slideshow, and there's tons of things. I was going to say, this is a large amount of land that you're working with.
And did you plant, seeds, or did you plant little plants? What did you use?
Well, we got one organic area where there was plants that was taken from somewhere else. And then it was some that we just, one guy from the grocery store, you know, 99-cent packs and just planted seeds.
Mm-hmm.
But some of our big beef tomatoes, we transported them from somewhere else. Those were whole plants when we planted them.
Yeah, so and that's the way it works. Sometimes you go with seeds and sometimes you go with starter plants, and depending on how you want to do it. Now, you talked a little bit about working with other people, maybe about 40 other people, and working the land. What's your overall experience from working on this farm?
It's positive. It's like, I don't know, it taught me a certain ounce of brotherhood for the summer. Being able to, well, having to work with that many people and having to come together to get something done.
Mm-hmm. And I like the idea you say brotherhood, having a brotherhood with these other people.
Yes, sir.
So what's next for you? I mean, do you think, first of all, you would be interested in working the soil again and maybe doing a garden of your own, or working in a community garden or even a professional one?
Well, now that I have the know-how, that's definitely a possibility.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing right at the present?
I'm preparing myself to next go on the EMT training.
And when is that?
I'm going to start the January semester.
January semester. And where are you going to be taking that?
I'm going to look and see if they have it in Prairie State around the house or not. I'm going to do some more research, but I'm definitely been buckling down on what I was going to do lately.
Right, and that's all in preparation of becoming a firefighter?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, Lawless, I'm glad you were able to be on the show. Appreciate it. I'm glad you were able to help out at God's Harbor for All Souls. You said you hadn't been back to see the crops yet, have you?
Actually, I went that day.
Oh, you went there today. What'd you think?
I went that day. The day.
That day. Okay. What'd you think?
They growing.
Well, I mean, does that surprise you, or you know, did you ever think that you could contribute to something like that?
I mean, just planting the seeds and having not been done before, I didn't think it was gonna turn out like that.
Well, I guess you've learned something, and that's something that I hope you can pass along to some other people.
Yes, sir.
Well, Lawless, thank you so much. Good luck on the training. I hope you make it. If you don't get the firefighter job, there's always agriculture. You know, you could always do that again.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and good luck to you, buddy.
All right. God bless.
Take care. Bye-bye. Now, if you're a regular listener to Chicago's Progressive Talk, you already know that CETA can help your home go green with weatherization services like attic insulation and home appliance upgrades. But did you know that CETA is also working to provide fresh food to people in underserved communities? For instance, if you've been listening to my show lately, like my interview just now with Lawless, you know that CETA is taking that knowledge and experience and partnering with the University of Illinois Extension and Wilbur Wright College to create community gardens throughout Cook County. It's called the CETA Stroger Summer Youth Program, and the goal is to grow and distribute locally grown foods to low-income residents. Two great side benefits are the vacant and underused land that will be put to use, and unemployed kids will have a chance to work the land and get paid for it. Chicago's Progressive Talk is proud to support the efforts of CETA. We invite you to log on to chicagoprogressivetalk.com and listen to the podcast of last Sunday afternoon show from God's Harbor for All Souls Church in Matson. And for more information about CETA, call 1-800-571-CETA, C-E-D-A, or visit cetaorg.net. That's cedaorg.net. This project was conducted with funds provided under the Community Services Block Grant Program and the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act administered by the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and it does not necessarily represent in whole or in part the viewpoint of the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. A man of few words, but you know it's tough for people who
it is. Plus, it's really early in the morning. I'm pretty sure he has a lot better things to do than wake up.
Well, yeah, you know, but I'm just grateful that he wanted to talk to me because I did want to chat with somebody who had actually worked on the farm down there. And
it's always interesting to hear how difficult gardening is from people who are just starting.
But it isn't. You know what he said was that he didn't expect it to end up like that, but it did. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that's the flip side of it. It's anybody who gets into it for the first time will plant something and they think, oh, this isn't going to work. And then when it does work, they say, hey, how did that happen? Well,
right.
What happened is, you know, you put the seed in the soil and you amend it with... Oh, if I say the word compost, am I going to get in trouble with Jake?
Well, no. What I'm assuming he meant was the difficult part was getting rid of all the brush and the roots.
Well, that's the hard
part. It took 6 weeks to do that.
That's why they got kind of they had kind of a slow start there. But if you look at it now, for next year, they're ready to go.
Exactly.
They're going to add more soil amendments, and they'll get an earlier start. They're planning to get some hoop houses out there. You know, we talked about that during the broadcast last week. And, you know, I wish them luck. I think it's going to be great next year.
By the way, I'm looking at your, I took you up on the offer of looking at the slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at MikeNovak.net, and I'm looking at your picture on here.
Yeah.
You're wearing the exact same thing today.
No, I'm not. It's not.
Yes,
that,
you
it's
are.
Just
you look exactly
similar.
Like the picture.
Okay, the black and white. Yeah, I look like
picture.
Farmer John in there, right? Yeah. Farmer Mike. No, this is a similar shirt.
Sure.
But it's not...
So you have like the Homer Simpson closet where it's
exactly,
all,
they're all
the same thing?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Actually, I only have one shirt. That's it. I just wear the same one every single day. Okay, the heat is on, or it will be soon. As the weather gets colder, the heat is on. Your walls, your attract insects and other bugs. Rick Moskowitz at A-Plus Pest Control says that whether it's your furnace or the sun providing the energy, these critters don't really care. Every living thing needs four things to survive: food, shelter, water, and heat. Heat's the one that's you're going to be providing for them. Well, sometimes the sun does, too. Anyway, that's why A-Plus Pest Control goes 3 feet up and 6 feet out from your wall, soaking everything, including vegetation, with all natural, non-toxic cedar oil. This is the same cedar oil used in all of their Plus Natural Enzymes line of insect repellents. This same product is used at Charter One Pavilion on Northerly Isle for the past 2 seasons to let people enjoy their concerts in peace. Now, you can have that same professional protection for your home. And in the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking, well, you know, we talk about insects trying to invade your home now, and then at some point rodents want to do the same thing. So you might be, you might want to listen to what we have to say. And while it keeps ants, spiders, centipedes, millipedes, and more at bay, cedar oil doesn't harm beneficial insects, wildlife, or aquatic animals. A-Plus Pest Control products are available at Healthy Green Goods at 702 Main Street in Evanston, Crafty Beaver on Oakton in Skokie, The Green Horizon, 1148 Central in Wilmette, and Scuba Systems, 3919 Oakton in Skokie. Or give Rick a call and find out for yourself. A lot of different services, so go to APlusPest.com. That's www.APlusPest.com. Or call toll-free 888-APlus99. 888-APlus99. Remember, when it comes to pest control, they do it like they live there. Yeah, well, Mr. Blue Sky's here today, but if we go to line five and talk to Rick DeMaio, this is we're coming to the end of the line here with all his good stuff, aren't we?
You know what? I don't know about that, Mike. I mean, you know, forecasts sometimes, you know, even though they may, you know, appear to be extremely pessimistic for a couple of days, oftentimes, you know, you still get some pretty nice weather at the, I guess, when the line changes, so to say, right? But don't think that this is the end of nice weather. You know, we're going to get into some really, really, you know, nasty weather over the next 24 hours. But right now, it's beautiful in downtown Chicago, perfect, clear, sunshiny weather right here up on the lake on Rogers Park. But as you know, driving into work this morning, once again, a lot of dense fog this morning, Mike.
Hey, listen, there's sunshine in Rogers Park, but, you know, on the south side here in Pulaski, it was snowing this morning. I don't know if you realize
yeah.
that.
Okay, explain there.
Well, I just made that up. That's how I can explain
okay,
it. Okay,
all right.
I'm just trying to be as pessimistic as possible. See?
No. This is one of those days where we're kind of beginning to get on the front edge of a very strong storm system that's going to develop over the next probably, I'd say, 24 to 48 hours over the northern Great Lakes. And I think people have to enjoy today because I think, really, the weather today, Mike, is going to be the best it'll be for probably the next 7 to 8 days. And that takes us all the way into next Monday.
See, and you
really?
Accuse me of being pessimistic, and you're now saying, batten the hatches!
I understand that. But what I'm saying is, just because, you know, I'm saying this is the best weather for the next 7 to 8 days, doesn't mean that day 9 and day 10 can't be just as good, right?
Yeah. Oh, wait. Listen. Hey, the next 4 months are not going to be so good, but, you know.
I know.
Get back with us in March. Everything will be fine.
You know, Mike and Jessica, good morning to you as well. You know, oftentimes people don't realize, but the month of September in Chicago still, to me, is the best weather month out of all 12.
I'm with you there, pal. I just think September is it, and this September...
Oh, it's been nice.
It proved it.
I
think this is the best month we've had of all the warm months we've had this year.
Right, and the reason why it's nice is because it's consistent. Usually you can kind of, you know, you can kind of tell what it's going to be like from day to day, week to week. Granted, you're going to have some lousy days in between, but I finished up teaching my climate change class last Wednesday at the Art Institute. I had about 3 hours between my next class at Columbia, and I could have went inside and did some work. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go across the street to the gardens of the Art Institute building itself because I'm across the street at the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, man, these gardens look unbelievably nice. And the thing about it is, usually when you get to, like, the middle of September, and you know, for sure, you know this more than anybody, Mike, the gardens, everything is in full bloom. All the colors begin to have somewhat of a muted look to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so bright and cheery as it is when you put them into the ground, but everything looks nice and healthy. And even looking around the gardens around Buckingham Fountain, I'm looking around, I'm going, is there a better-looking city than Chicago in the month of September? I mean, it really was quite impressive. And even when you get that little bit of a hint of yellow and orange in the trees, which we've seen particularly in the locust trees, everything just has a nice palette of color. And this time of the year, boy, if you can get a couple of nice sunny days, it's like it's better than what it is in May or June. And when you get to like the end of June and July, it's hot and it's humid and it's like 98 degrees with the dew point of 70, or it's windy. But this time of the year just seems to be really nice. You know what I did yesterday? I took my my son and I took our kayaks out, and we went about as far out over the lake as I've been all summer because the wind was very light. And I'm looking around, I'm like, this is why are more people out here? But I think people kind of get that mindset where it clicks off this time of the year because pessimism, like you brought into the beginning of the conversation,
hey,
begins to kind of underwhelm, or I should say kind of undermine, these feelings of good weather, because we know that the end is near. You know, we know that, like, right around the corner, oh, well, you know, it's nice out, but it's not going to last, right? And the sun is down by 6:45, so why go out for that hour walk at 5:30? And why should I enjoy this? Because it's true. We know that within 3 months or 2 months, literally, it's going to be snowy and cold. But so the bottom line, I feel like I'm at church right now giving a sermon, right?
You have to with me. It's the only way I'm going to be convinced. You're right. My job is to exaggerate things so that people can respond to them, right, Jessica?
You just want to exacerbate the situation.
Yeah, I want to make things worse,
sure,
if I can. You know, you were talking about the colors.
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful, actually.
And they are, and
In a muted way. I totally agree with that, man.
Well, I just went to there's this website that I had up for a couple of weeks, and Kathleen, if you're listening, I'd love to get this on the homepage of MikeNovak.net, and it is The Miracle of Fall, which is a website that a guy at Illinois Extension, Ron Wolford, put together for me, and it's a comprehensive look at fall all over the mm-hmm. country, and one of the reports they have is the Fall Color Report in Wisconsin. So I just clicked on there. About the upper third of Wisconsin, they're at 26% to 50% right now of color.
Oh Mike, there's some counties actually that are beyond 60% to 65% already.
Well, there's one.
Yeah.
Price County is 51% to 75% right now.
Right. And I guarantee you.
And so is Milwaukee for some reason. Why would Milwaukee be different? That's odd, because it's so far, much farther south than Price County.
Mean more of a change?
Than the counties around it. I mean.
Yeah, I don't understand. I've seen that before, and I think it has to do with there's a couple of forest preserves maybe nearby. But, you know, again, the state of Wisconsin has had one of the driest summers I can remember in a long, long time. The bottom line is, if people want to go up and enjoy the fall colors, obviously it's going to be tough to go up to northern Wisconsin today. And the problem with the storm system that comes through, getting back to short-term weather here,
they
had winds probably gusting to about 20 to 25 miles per hour today. So whatever fog is around the area is going to blow away very quickly. We'll make it up to about 77, maybe 78 degrees today, which is about 8 degrees above average. And then there'll be actually two cold fronts. The first one will come through about midnight. It'll shift the wind around to the west. But then the second one really enforces the cold air early tomorrow morning, and unfortunately, we'll have probably two consecutive days of winds between about 35 and about 40 miles per hour here in Chicago, probably gusts up to 50 in some areas. So temperatures tomorrow probably only near 60. Morning wind chills tomorrow probably in the lower 40s, and morning wind chills on Tuesday, get this, probably in the mid-30s.
Hey!
Now, those are wind chills, okay? Now, the reason why I bring up the wind is because when you get these real strong early autumn storms with a lot of wind,
usually what that does is, particularly to trees that have not had a lot of rain in the, during the summertime, which is what they have up in Wisconsin and Michigan this year, that tends to take the leaves and yank them off the branches very, very quickly. So I have a feeling, and this is really, I hate to say this, but I got a feeling that the fall foliage season this year for northern Wisconsin and Michigan is going to be very short-lived due to the nature of this storm that's going to develop over the next couple of days. And not so much that the leaves are not doing their job, but the weather's not cooperating. And you know better than anybody is, if you have a beautiful fall foliage, you need to have a lot of light wind to keep those leaves on the trees for a long time.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be
kind of yank them off?
What? Yeah, what I'm wondering though, this is so early that is it going to do that much damage? Because you know we're not really at peak at the moment, and I'm wondering if those leaves. But you're right. If there's 50 mile an hour winds, is going to yank a few leaves off.
Yeah, that's what we call in the weather class an old window rattler. And I've seen that before. Now, granted, that's far north, so I do think here in the Chicago metropolitan, the leaves will probably still be fine. So I'm not going to paint a completely grim picture. But overall, I think you know we've had temperatures 2 degrees above normal. I went swimming in Lake Michigan yesterday where the water is up to 67 degrees.
Mr. Kayak, Mr. Swimming, you athletic guy, you.
Well, you have to swim when you tip over in your kayak.
Oh, I see. That's it.
I thought you said there were light winds. Why'd you tip over?
Well, you know, when you're trying to hold a beer in your hand and kayak at the same time, Jessica, something's got to give, you know?
You're my kind of man.
Yeah. So Mike, I know we've got to finish up here, but I know a lot of big things were happening at the UN this week. President Obama was giving his address on climate change.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that there's a lot of uncertainty on how the nations kind of want to get together on this. And you know what? It kind of makes sense because when you think about it, a couple of years ago, we were coming out of two horrific hurricane seasons. There was an urge to do something. And climate change to me is like a cancer. Okay, when you fight it and it goes away, you kind of leave it alone. You hope that it doesn't come back. It goes into remission and no one does anything about it. And all of a sudden when it reappears, you go, oh, wait a minute, we have to do something about it. Because obviously you can't see it because it's technically, or from a visual standpoint, not there. But oddly enough, sea surface temperatures globally for the months July and August were actually above normal. They were the warmest they've ever been over the last 130 years. And because we've been in somewhat of a lull hurricane-wise, particularly in the Atlantic, not so much in the Pacific, and not so much in the West Pacific, which is obviously over by Asia, I think the global economic crisis has done more than anything to suppress anybody's willingness to do something about this. So, this is kind of a shame, and I got a feeling that even though they may do a lot of talking between now and Copenhagen,
mm-hmm.
may not get something done. And you know what? Even though I think a lot of the leaders are kind of upset and kind of bummed out about this, is probably the best way to go about saying it. I think eventually they'll probably get some sort of deal done and sort of pact done. It's nice that they're actually getting somewhat anxious about it because obviously when you have deadlines, that's what deadlines do. They make you become anxious. But I do think that everything is kind of geared towards the global economic crisis. That's one of the reasons why people. Or some of the reasons why the leaders have been somewhat, you know, kind of stepping on their own feet, so to say. And that's going to happen. But I do think probably within the next year, they'll probably have a good framework on what to do over the next 10 to 15 years for sure.
Well, yeah, I was doing a little reading on this, too, and looking at the difference between, you know, Kyoto and now, where Bill Clinton basically endorsed the Kyoto Protocol and then came back to the United States and the Congress would have nothing to do with it.
Right, yeah. And again, he was, I think, trying to cut his political losses at that particular point.
But it is disturbing, as you say, that something might not get done here because it's the scientists know that change. I mean, you talk about it all the time on the program. There is climate change, and it doesn't help when our area of the country or even large swaths of the United States have had one of the coolest summers in a while. But that's all part of the global picture, and unfortunately in the United States, we don't look at the global picture. We're not interested in the global picture.
Right.
We're only interested in what's in our own backyard.
Right. When you have major cities like Chicago, New York City, and Boston, and Washington, D.C., below average, people go, okay, well, it's not happening. And then I come to my class on Wednesday, I say, By the way, we've had 4 days above 90. Portland, Oregon has had 28 days above 90 degrees this year. And I go, what? I go, oh, yeah, and parts of the desert southwest have had record high temperatures in parts of Australia and parts of Europe. And they go, what? I go, yeah, because the media isn't reporting it that way. And it's bizarre that they don't. And I think a lot of times people are afraid, you know, just give the facts. You know, you don't have to go in there with a deterministic opinion on this, but just give the facts. And even though we've had below average, you know, hurricane activity in the Atlantic Ocean, doesn't mean that it's not going to be above normal next year. So, again, it's all about giving the facts and laying a framework for people to understand what's going on. But the bottom line is, you know, even if something doesn't happen this year, I do have a lot of, you know, faith that something will happen next 2 years. Why? Because I think the United States finally has an administration in place that will help make that happen. And I think that's where I'm still very much optimistic on the whole.
Well, I hope you're right, because something else I read recently was that as humans, we find it hard to look at the warnings that are, you know, we're programmed for fight or flight response.
Right.
And as you say, coming off of two big strong hurricanes, yeah, let's do something. And then a couple of years down the road, several years down the road, oh, you know, it's really nothing's happening. And it's unbelievable how short-sighted we are about these things.
Yeah. Go all the way back to, going back to 1941, how long were things going on in Europe before we finally said, you know, I think we have to go in and help them out a little bit, you know? It wasn't until, you know, December 7th did the United States finally say, I think we need to get involved in this. So, I don't think anybody needs to be blamed on this. I think it's what we call human nature. But at the same time, as long as educators continue to do their work, and people still have somewhat of an open mind, I think things will get better.
Well, not to get too political about this, but the United States has to step up and take the lead, and if we're going to pass a climate bill, it's got to be a strong one that sends a signal to the rest of the world that, you know what, we are cleaning up our own backyard, and this is why we think you should get on board too, but we, for so long we haven't, so why should anybody else listen to us at this point? So, unless we do that, we've got no moral ground, no moral high ground.
Well, you know, as long as we can do it arm in arm with countries like China, which has now begun to surpass the United States in carbon emissions, as well as India, I think that once that gets on board, I think that's okay. And I think Obama's decision not to install the missile defense system in parts of Europe earlier last week, I think it was, I think he basically said, you know what, we need to be friendly again with the Russians. And I think that actually helped out a lot to forge, I think, a compromise on climate talks over the next couple of years. Because obviously, if you do something like that, they'll say, well, wait a minute, you're putting these in here aimed at us. Why should we bother talking to you about climate? You know what I'm saying? So I think
sure.
Obama's doing the right thing at saying, hey, look, you know, we have other important things to talk about. Why piss you off over something that's going to make the other five things twice as hard to talk about? Let's be friends again. And I think we finally had that framework, so that's why I think I'm optimistic about it.
Okay, so we got some winds blowing in, and, you know, when you mentioned that about tomorrow and the winds and possibly gusts of 50, I kept thinking of my poor tropicals out in the backyard, which I have to start thinking about bringing back into the house, that, you know, the ones that have been out there all summer, especially if you say wind chills as low as what?
Wind chills probably tomorrow morning about 45, and wind chills probably about 38 to 39 on Tuesday morning.
Woo!
Actual temperatures probably in the mid-40s, but definitely some windy and cool weather coming. If we get a couple of sprinkles tonight, that's about it. But cloudy, windy, cool tomorrow, cloudy, sunny during the day on Tuesday, good-looking day on Wednesday, and then back to windy and warmer the Thursday before rain arrives on Friday. So the pattern, I think, has finally gone back to what we call a more autumnal progressive change pattern. So a progressive pattern for a progressive news talk station, right?
Okay, whatever. Yeah.
Really?
He really stretched on that. Okay.
I I read it just like they paid me to read it, right?
Ow, he's killing me here.
Zing.
He is killing me here. Okay, Rick DeMaio Weather, who's right at the top of MikeNovak.net. I don't know if you know that, but I give him a prominent spot right on the top of my website. You can go to MikeNovak.net and click on to Rick DeMaio Weather, or you can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You'll be back next week.
Yeah, I'll be back next week, and we're putting some new links on the website that kind of help people follow along with the climate change talks in the UN and also for leading up to Copenhagen, Mike.
Excellent. All right, okay. Have a great week.
Talk to you later, Mike.
Bye. Here's a tip from the care of trees. Now is a time to start thinking about winter pruning for your trees. When the leaves have dropped in the fall, it's easier for your arborist to see the structure and architecture of your trees. Also, when summer annuals have been removed, there's less risk of disrupting your landscape when working on large trees. In regions where the soil freezes, they can get equipment in closer. I mean, that's us, believe it or not, which increases safety and can reduce your costs. Winter pruning can also reduce the risk of introducing some serious diseases that are active and spread easily during the growing seasons of spring and summer. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Michael Moore, the hero of the working class, presents his newest film, Capitalism, A Love Story. And WCPT AM and FM has another chance for you to see it before it opens.
Where's our money?
I don't know.
This Wednesday night, the film will be shown at the AMC River East, and we have first-come, first-served passes to give away on our website.
This is Michael Moore. I am here to make a citizen's arrest of AIG.
See Capitalism, A Love Story, before it opens on October 2nd. Get the details at chicagosprogressivetalk.com.
Thanks, Kathleen. The Miracle Fall is now up on MikeNovak.net, so if you're looking to find out where you're going to go for the fall, it's right on there. You know, it's above where my Twitter update should be, and of course I haven't updated. Hotline. Oh, we got the hotline running again. This is great. I always love it when it rings here. Anyway, the Miracle Fall is up, but you can click on that, and thanks to Ron Wolford at Illinois Extension for putting that together. Now, the more I talk about EcoLawn, the more people ask me questions about it. Why? Well, you know why. They're tired of tired-looking lawns that gobble up fertilizer and water and money. And when they hear me talk about the environmental qualities of EcoLawn, they're really interested. I got an email from a friend just yesterday who said she was trying EcoLawn. I think, go for it. And she said she had planted it a week ago. It germinated very quickly. She's very excited. It's coming up. She's keeping it watered and can't wait to see what happens next year. Now, here's a scoop. EcoLawn doesn't need to be fertilized, and once established, will rarely need water. It's a blend of 7 fine fescues. That is what I call envirological. EcoLawn grows slowly, so you don't have to mow often or ever, if you choose. And right now, through the end of October, you can get a 10% discount on EcoLawn if you use the special code for the Mike Novak Show. Just go to www.eco-lawn.com and enter the code MN909. That's MN909. www.eco-lawn.com. Enter the code MN909 for the discount on your EcoLawn. That'll get you going on a Sunday morning. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let us go to Line 5 and bring in Bob Ehrlich. And do I pronounce that right, Bob, your last name?
That's correct, Mike. Bob Ehrlich.
Bob Ehrlich, because some people say Ehrlich. but you're Ehrlich. And here's what you got to do if you're listening and you have access to a computer. And I know I always tell you to go to MikeNovak.net and this week's show. But here's another reason. If you go to this week's show and about halfway down, there is a link to the photos that Bob sent me of the Monarchs. Have you been up there yet, Bob, to see what I posted?
No, I was on there last night, and I haven't had a chance this morning. My wife's been on the computer.
Get her off the computer and say, I need to look at this. Bob sent me a great slideshow of photos of the Monarchs that he's been raising and tagging. I mean, it's awesome. It's just really cool stuff. And you can click either on the photo on the left. You'll see a bunch of Monarchs around. They're so crowded on this plant. I can't even tell what it is. Looks like a helianthus or something like that. Do you have any idea what that might be, Bob?
That's the Mexican sunflower.
Oh, Mexican sunflower.
Yeah,
okay.
It's actually called Fittonia torch, and I it's one of the seed packets that I got from Monarch Watch when I joined their organization. And it is really a butterfly magnet. But I couldn't find the plants in the garden center, so I just grew my own again this year from seed. And it gets to be an enormous bush with yellow sunflower-type flowers on them, and their monarchs are all over them all the time.
Isn't it amazing that some of the best plants you just can't find at the garden centers? You just think, wow, how come you can't get the Tithonia, this kind
and
of
Tithonia? The other thing with is that I was even going to mention this morning, talking about, and you just brought us right into it. In 2008, when I went to buy milkweed, and I went to two major garden centers, and I said, I need some milkweed to draw monarchs to my backyard, they looked at me like I had two heads. And I sent you a couple pictures of the red milkweed and the swamp milkweed,
yeah,
which are really beautiful plants. And if anybody ever has them, I mean, they would want them year after year. It's just it's a stalk plant with tapered leaves, and it's like giving fillets to the monarchs instead of what they're usually seeing, the common milkweed, which is everywhere.
Yeah.
And, I have seven swamp milkweed plants, and I had about 10 of the red milkweed this year. And they would rather lay their eggs on a one-foot-tall red milkweed plant than on a six-foot-tall common milkweed plant.
Really?
Yes.
They're more attracted to those plants.
Yes, they are, and you just can't find them.
Have you gone to the native plant sites and businesses? Where did you find them finally?
No, I ended up buying the stalks of the red milkweed from a woman in Florida. I contacted her online, and she sent me 10 cuttings each year for like 30 cents a piece. It was next to nothing. And I, then potted them, and they grew into beautiful plants each of the last 2 years. And this year I'm going to try to winter some over, or I'm not really sure. I might even ask you if you know the best way to do it. I've got the stalks, and so what she sent me was the stalk. And if I cut my stalks off this year, can I put them in the refrigerator for a month and maybe plant them in January in the basement under my grow lights? And do you think that would get me some plants and maybe get me some plants to pass on to some other people?
Yikes. I don't know. I'd have to do some research on this to figure out whether that works. I'm going to do what we need to do is a little research, first of all, on how to find these plants in the Chicago area. And I'm going to look through some of, in fact, Jessica's kind of looking right now to see where you can track them down. But as for overwintering, now wait a second. Aren't they perennials though, or are they annuals?
So the red milkweed is a perennial.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
The red milkweed is an annual.
That's the annual.
It's an annual. And the swamp milkweed is a perennial, and that does grow in this area. And I have seen it in two different sites. And I actually got mine by going out with a shovel and a bucket of water and digging up seven plants.
You got to be careful about that.
Yeah, well, these were along the side of a railroad track. So
okay, all right.
That's where I got them, and they're a beautiful plant. They send up pink and yellow, and they send up pink and white flowers. And when they bloom, they last the whole season. They just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, very pretty plants. And if the garden centers would carry them, I mean, all they'd have to do is say, this is the plant that monarchs will lay their eggs on. I mean, they would just sell them right out.
I think so. Kids would love that. Parents would love that. It'd be fabulous. I'll tell you what, Bob, I got started a little late with you here. I want, and I got a break for news, But I want you to hang on, and because we've just started the conversation about you and the Monarchs and tagging them, and I want folks to go to the slideshow you sent me, and you can see how you tag Monarchs. It's really kind of fascinating. And during the news, let's see if we can dig up some sources for some of the red and swamp milkweed. So can you hang on with me, Bob?
I'd love to, yes.
All right, great. That is Bob Ehrlich, and he's our... Monarch guy, he's the Monarch desk is Bob Ehrlich, and we'll get back to him in a sec. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and now through October 3rd, you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 30% off the entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, fall garden mums are just $250 each when you buy four. You'll also save up to 50% off all remaining nursery stock, and Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free. Now is the time to plant spring-blooming fall bulbs. Sid's has a huge selection available, and all value packs of bulbs, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more, are just $8.99 each. Visit sidsonline.com to download the coupon for free plant food with your bulb purchase, and also for details for SIDS Fall Pond Seminar coming up in a few weeks. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. And I just had an idea. If I've got, whoa, where did this, lost our little computer here. Does this mean we're not going to? What happened? Oh, keep oak. Well, we may just be going on. I'm not sure we're going to have news here. It just sort of boop, all disappeared in front of me here. And if so, I'm just going to go back to Bob. Here's what I'm suggesting is, and we'll see if news breaks.
You're listening to WCPT's Self-Help Sundays. 4 hours of home improvement help for inside and outside your home. This is WCPT AM Willow Springs, Chicago. WCPT FM Arlington Heights. WCPY DeKalb and WCPQ Park Forest. Self-Help Sundays on WCPT AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Hey, welcome back. It's hour two of the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by EcoLawn, the ultimate low-maintenance, drought-tolerant lawn, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Here he is, once again, Mike Novak.
And, of course, we're referring to the studio here. The monitor's back. We had news and everything. Just couldn't tell when it was going to happen. That's what happens when your monitor goes out. Welcome, dude. This is the second hour of Soft Soap Sunday on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I saw Joe Builder already in the building. He was here early. He doesn't get up that early. Usually.
He was here very early.
What do you think is going on there? Anyway.
Maybe he set his clock wrong. The only thing I can come up with.
That's it. The Joe Builder's in the building, and it's only because he has no idea how to set the clock. And he and Ron Cowgill are here with Mighty House at 10 o'clock from 10 to noon on Soft Soap Sunday on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And we'll probably talk to them a little before 10 a.m. Have we seen any sign of Edith Macra yet?
You know what? I haven't looked. I'm sorry. I'll go out there and double check right now.
Maybe she's in the green room waiting to come on the program. It is quite possible.
It is very possible.
Well, that's what happened when all the lights go out. We have to, we take care of that first, and then we take care of our guests. Let's go back to line five and Joe Ehrlich. Bob Ehrlich, sorry. Hello.
Hello.
Bob, hello. Sorry about that, Bob. Hey, and while, and of course, I should have known, and I was going to suggest this, that if anybody wants to call us at 773-838-WCPT and tell us where to get swamp milkweed, or the red milkweed, that they could do it, and I would give them a prize. But then, of course, Dan Costa called from Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale, and Dan, you're such a regular, I don't know if I can afford to give you a prize. How you doing, Dan?
I don't know if you can afford to pay me, Mike.
Yeah, no, well, I can't pay DeMaio yet, so, you know, I don't think I can pay you.
Oh, well.
But you've got some of the milkweed.
Yes, we carry the red and the white swamp milkweed every year, and the tuberosa, the butterfly weed. And earlier in the season, we had some of the tropical one as well.
Did you?
So we carry milkweeds.
That's great. Now, explain where Vern Goer's is there, Dan.
We're in Hinsdale, Illinois, 5620 South Oak Street. That's one block west of County Line Road and one and a half blocks of 55th Street. If you're familiar with the area, it also would be due east of the Hinsdale Oasis on 294. Unfortunately, they haven't put in a direct exit from the expressway to our place, but we're working on that one.
People can get there, and they can pick up the swamp milkweed. Now, you said you had different kinds of swamp milkweed. You had...
Yeah, I have the red, and then I have the white one, which is called Ice Ballet.
Is that really the pink one? Are they calling it red, but it's really pink?
It's a real dark pinkish. It's almost a red.
Yeah.
But it's not the wild one that creeps and spreads all over your yard. Just, you know, these stay in place.
Now, Bob, you're in Evergreen Park, but
correct.
I'm sure if you needed to get over to Hinsdale, you could handle that.
Yeah, and I did find one local nursery in my area that did have it, a very small nursery, and the only reason I knew they had it because I saw a plant on somebody's porch, and I went up and rang their doorbell and asked them where they got it. So, you know, if I go talk to a couple of the nurseries in our area over here, you know, maybe they would carry it. We'll see. If people call up their nursery and ask for it, their garden center, I'm sure that they would get it for them. But if they don't know to ask and the garden centers don't know to carry it, you know, then we've got a, you know, an impasse. And demand will cause these places to carry it, I think. And it's just a beautiful plant.
If it's going to have butterflies, monarchs and host monarchs, yeah, why wouldn't you have that in your yard?
Butterfly weed one did fantastic this year. It was just a complete ball of orange flowers, and it's up near the street. And people walking by were asking what that was, and, you know, beautiful plants.
Is that the orange glory that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have that, too. That's a beautiful plant.
You know, okay, I've got to where we went to Art and Linda's wildflowers.com, and they're listing some of the places, the native plant and seed sources. And of course, Art and Linda's Wildflowers is another one, which is Art and Linda's wildflowers.com. Don't scroll too fast there. Let's see. Where was the one? Scroll back up there. And then down again. Then there's a Blue Stem Prairie Nursery in Hillsboro, Illinois. Let's see, who else we got? Country Road Greenhouses in Rochelle, Byron Native Nursery in St. Charles, Ion Exchange Native Seed and Plant Nursery. That's in Iowa. Midwest Ground Covers, of course, in St. Charles, the Natural Garden in St. Charles. Planter's Palette has some native, you know, the problem is you got to call these places and make sure they have this, in particular. Possibility Place in Monee, I know they deal mostly in, trees and shrubs. Prairie Nursery in Westfield, and other places like Medewin, Tallgrass Prairie Alliance, and Friends of the Indiana Dunes. There's all kinds of different places, but you do have to track them down. These are not the kind of plants, unless you go to Vern Goers, that you're going to find in every nursery. And sometimes, as you say, Bob, you got to ask for them.
You got to ask for them.
Yeah.
Every year.
Well, great. Dan, always great hearing from you. Thank you for calling. I really appreciate it.
Anytime I can help, Mike.
And I know it, and I appreciate you listening early, too. Take care.
I'll wake up with you now.
Oh, dear God. all right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye. Bob Ehrlich is on the phone here. And, Bob, I'll get back to you in just a second, but he is our Monarch guy, and what did we call you on the website? The Monarch, Special Monarch Correspondent.
There you go.
Yeah, you're the senior. That's it. Senior Monarch Correspondent Bob Ehrlich, and we will be back to him in just a second. Have you ever considered going solar? If so, the Illinois Solar Tour, happening next Saturday, October 3rd, is for you. Now, you probably heard about this on WCPT, and if you go to ChicagoProgressiveTalk.com, it's on the website as well, and you can be part of the tour. Dick Kaye is going to be broadcasting live from Uncommon Ground Restaurant next week as well. So it's all part of the big solar tour on October 3rd. Now, more than 100 Chicago area homes and businesses using renewable energy will be on display. You talk to owners who have taken the plunge, many of whom are opening their doors so you can view their renewable systems inside and out. The Chicago Center for Green Technology, a nationally recognized green building and the home of WRD Environmental, is one of the tour stops. Solar panels provide almost half of the building's energy, which also includes geothermal heating and cooling. WRD has helped to make green tech the model of sustainability that it is. They created the building's water-conserving landscape that emphasizes native plants and includes a wetland that absorbs stormwater and filters pollutants. WRD even designed a solar-powered fountain that uses rainwater collected from the building's roof. The solar tour is free and pre-registration is required. Learn more and download a free tour guide at illinoisolar.org. And for experienced, sustainable landscape development, turn to the professionals at WRD Environmental. Visit us at WRDEnvironmental.com. We'll be back to Bob Ehrlich and the Monarchs in about 60 seconds.
Planning a new home or starting a remodeling project? Let the light flow into every room with style and grace. Marvin Design Gallery by Estates Windows Limited knows that any room's appearance is greatly affected by its windows. Today's discerning homeowner looks for three things in a window purchase: quality, style, and energy savings. At Marvin Design Gallery, you'll find the unmatched quality of all wood frames, over 11,000 standard and custom window designs, plus the energy savings of wood construction and special glass treatments. Now you can see, touch, and operate over 70 window and door displays at their state-of-the-art showroom. Marvin Design Gallery is located in Lake Bluff at 930 North Shore Drive, on the web at marvinbyestates.com, or call 847-615-1003. That's 847-615-1003. Marvin Design Gallery, featuring that distinctive window that fills a room with light to make it something really special.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We are on the line right now with Bob Ehrlich, and we're talking about monarch butterflies. Hey, Bob, at last count, you sent me, and this was weeks ago, you had released over 600 monarchs this year. What's the count to date?
Well, as of today, I have 755 that I've released.
Holy smoke.
And I'm down to my last six, and I've got seven this morning that are going to fly out of here, and they better start heading south fast, because I understand that they can't really function in weather lower than, like, 60 degrees.
So this weather coming the next couple of days is not going to be good for them. And if I had the last five or six that are going to be born here, I may just move them in the house for a couple, 3 days and wait till the weather gets a little bit better. I'm not going to release anything in what's coming tomorrow and the next day.
Okay, and last time you were on the show, you said something really interesting, which was there are two types of monarchs, the ones that are going to go all the way to Mexico and the ones that aren't.
Well, they say that the last group of the year, the fourth or fifth generation,
yeah,
is genetically slightly different than the other ones. They're meant genetically to last 8 or 9 months, whereas the other ones are meant to only last 4 to 6 weeks. And why, you know, I don't know, but everything you read about monarchs is strange. And if you believe one thing, you need to believe everything else. There was a little article in the Trib this week, just a small couple paragraphs, that scientists think they found out how these butterflies managed to get to Mexico. They painted the antennas of monarchs and they got lost. So they've determined that there's something in their antenna that directs them to go to central Mexico.
Well, yeah, the radio signal's coming out of Mexico.
Yeah, they're picking up the Sputnik up in the air and heading to Mexico.
Everybody knows that. That's exactly what's going on. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I want to see the scientists painting the little antenna. You know, it's like you slap
a... Yeah, how do you do that?
Well, I'm going to ask you, how do you slap a tag on a monarch?
Well, actually tagging is really very easy. It's a small dot that's about the size of a pencil eraser, and I lift it slightly off the paper that it's on, and I put a toothpick under it, and then I place the monarch on my leg, and I put the little tag on a specific part of his wing and hold it on for just about 3 or 4 seconds, and then I let him go. And I ended up tagging 350. So it would be wonderful if, you know, one of those happened to make it. My daughter, Missy, in Waukegan, you know, I mentioned last time, she just did it. I mean, she did it with my 4-year-old grandson, Ethan. They ended up releasing 71 out of their little kitchen, and they just checked every time they went to the park, they checked for eggs a little bit, and they found some. They didn't really go out of their way that much. But even releasing 71 monarchs is a tremendous thing. And what I'm going to try to do, I'm speaking to my first garden club a week from Thursday in Mount Greenwood at the library there. And
did I have anything to do with that?
You did, because, indirectly, I got a hold of Nancy Black. And Nancy
Nancy's great, yeah.
She's the director of garden clubs of Illinois, and I spent an hour with her last Friday with my wife. We went over there and talked with her, and she's going to hopefully get me in to talk to the other 17, 18 clubs that she represents. And if I can just do a little bit of awareness, like having people call garden centers for the milkweed and letting them know what to do. You know, there's a lot of people that have milkweed already, and they've taken the first step. They planted the milkweed in their yards, and they know that monarchs are attracted to milkweed. But now they have to take the second step. They have to find and harvest the eggs and the caterpillars if they find them, and bring them in the house and release them. There was a big article in the Trib. I mean, a full-page, a wonderful article about Pat Miller of Westmont. She released 600 this year or last year. She's been doing it for 3 years, and she goes out, talks to people about it. So, you know, there is some news on it, and people can do it. And I believe she only harvested the eggs off of her own plant. She wasn't going out like I'm going out to, you know, behind buildings and along railroad tracks and fences and getting them. But people, if they just have their own and would just, you know, take care of what they got there and bring them inside, they're real easy to raise. And if you don't do that, what's happening is you're just, you know, providing food for the spiders for the summer. You know, so... the first step is to plant the milkweed. And the
second spiders! Left. Spiders need love too. Come
they
on, Bob.
And you're maybe going to have a spider advocate on next Sunday, saying we need those.
You bet I am.
Yeah, there you go.
In the interest of equal time for spiders.
Equal time. But I mean, everybody likes butterflies, and everybody that I talk to is just fascinated by it. And I think a lot of people would do it if they knew how easy it was, and they just need a little help. Yeah, monarchwatch.org gives you all the information you need on raising them.
And I've got a link to Monarch Watch on my website. And my question is, well, I just have so many questions, but we have so little time. But you said you'd be happy if one of your 350 tagged monarchs makes it to Mexico. How will you know?
Well, they actually, what they do in Mexico
And you know, maybe many of them would make it. And I'm not really sure whether when they get to Mexico, the little native village there in El Rosario, I believe is the name of it, they go out and search for monarchs with tags on them. And I don't know whether they're bringing back live specimens or whether they're just bringing the dead ones that they find, you know, that will be on the side of the road or something. But all of us that tag, and there's a lot of people that tag. There's 100,000 people that tag all across this country. I mean, this organization has been around 14 years, and he's been doing it many years before that. But when he decided to organize home gardeners to put milkweed in their backyards to help the monarchs, because we lose 6,000 acres a day to urban sprawl and developments, and their milkweed, which they need, the common milkweed, gets chopped down daily everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I had it happen to me twice this year where somebody chopped down milkweed that I was getting eggs off of every week just because they were, you know, sprucing up their area a little bit.
Yeah. And, I understand it. I hope they won't chop down the swamp milkweed that you plant because that's such a pretty plant.
And I didn't finish your question. They actually pay these people $5 a piece to bring any tagged monarch to them. So they make it worth their while, and that's the money that these people earn for the year. And then they go back and they enter everything on a computer, and it's available for people to go view on their website of tagged recoveries for monarchs. And it's a portion of their site. And I was on there, and they've had 11,000 tagged recoveries in 14 years. So it's not a lot. They get maybe 800 or 900 a year that are found.
Yeah.
And some of them are found. You know, I release it in Evergreen Park, and it has a phone number on there to call. If you find this monarch, you know, call this number.
Yeah.
So somebody in Oak Lawn might find one of mine and call in and say that they found it.
Well, you know, I saw monarchs up in my Heptacodium tree and Edith Macro, who's in the studio, is nodding. Ooh, Heptacodium, yes, okay. And it's a fall-blooming tree, unlike most trees, and it's very fragrant, and it's just covered in bees and monarchs. And when you said just a little while ago, they better hit the road, yeah, because I was listening to the Rick DeMaio forecast. I don't know if you caught that earlier, but
yes, I did.
It's going to get down to wind chills of perhaps in the upper 30s in a couple of days with wind gusts perhaps up to 50 miles an hour. I don't think monarchs are going to do too well in that.
Nope, they're not going to. They won't survive that. They'll just be lethargic, and you know, they fly only like 20 miles a day. That's all they fly.
Oh, you're breaking my heart here, Bob. I hate the
all that they go through to you know, for them to be born now and wake up and say, I got to go to Mexico today, and then winter over, and then fly back to Texas in the spring. It's an amazing journey for a little teeny lightweight butterfly.
I love the idea of being born, wake up, and say, I got to go to Mexico. Got to go to Mexico today. Okay, let's go. How do they know? Bob Ehrlich, thank you so much. It's great talking to you. You'll find all the information in his wonderful slideshow on MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show and keep me posted. And you know, I don't know if you want to keep those butterflies in your house for too long, as I don't know it's going to do much good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thanks again.
It was a great year, and I enjoyed it, and I'll be doing it again next year.
Well, next year, you get a hold of me, and we'll talk again, okay?
Okay, we'll do.
Take care, Bob.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I mentioned that Edith Macra is here in the studio. Hello, Edith.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm listening to Butterfly Talk all the way here. It was great.
Bob's fabulous. I mean, tagging 700 or raising 700 and releasing 700 monarchs, tagging half of those. With the little tags,
I think that's adorable.
It is adorable, but it's but it's kind of sad too because you know how few of them are actually going to make it.
Yeah, it is, especially if they can only go 20 miles. What was that in a day? So they can't get very far.
Well, while Edith Macra is the community trees advocate for the Morton Arboretum, it seems like an appropriate time to give a tip from the care of trees, and you can chime in if you want, because this is probably something you're aware of. Just because the weather is getting cooler, don't assume that your tree has enough water to get through the winter. At this time of year, annuals give up and perennials begin to go dormant, but the root systems of trees are still active, storing water for the long winter, which means that you need to pay attention to ground moisture, especially if you have a tree that was planted, oh, say, in the past 3 years or so. Evergreens are particularly vulnerable to desiccating winter winds. You should water all new newly planted trees until the ground freezes. By the way, the best way to water a new tree, drip hose. Right. Now,
slowly.
How long do you like to keep? It depends on the size of the tree, of
depends
course.
Depends on the size of the tree and what the conditions of the soil are like and where it's going. But it's slow trickle. It doesn't need to be fancy gizmo. I also like a leaky bucket. If you have a leaky watering can, sometimes I'll just tip one over. It works great.
So you don't need to throw it away.
Yeah, just
use it for the tree.
Exactly.
That's right. Don't just, it'll just end up in a compost pile anyway. The care of trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. And the care of trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care, putting you and your trees first. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the care of trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The care of trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Welcome, Edith. I'm glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
Edith Macra, as I said, is... Oh, you know what? Before we move on, we've got Fran, who's holding... And we just lost her.
Oh,
was
sorry,
just
Fran.
About to go there. And,
I know you were holding for a long time.
If she wants to call back. Fran, I will take your question. 773-838-WCPT. And if you have questions about trees or bugs... and Fran's was about insects, actually.
It was. It was about what plants are good for insects as well as butterflies. So it was very interesting.
Well, that's, you know what I would say offhand? Native plants.
Right.
You know, start with that. And that's why the milkweeds are so good. And trees. One of the things that I learned when I was reading Doug Tallamy's book, which is Bringing Nature Home, is how many insects are supported by oak trees.
Right. That's the top genus for supporting native species of insects. It was attracted sort of the most diversity, which is it's also a fabulous tree. There's a lot of different choices in it. So I was at his lecture we had at the Arboretum last weekend.
I know. I wish I could have been there.
You read the book. I shortcutted to the lecture. So I just sat there.
And I've interviewed him on this show. So
you're ahead of me.
The best of both worlds. But, Edith, this week you guys are having a seminar. At the Morton Arboretum, and I've got it right here. I'm looking at it. It's the Coping with the Cost, the Economic, Social, and Environmental Impact of Invasive Species on Our Communities. Right. Okay, that's a mouthful.
Catchy title. Very catchy title. It's meant to look at sort of the management implications and the impacts of invasive insects on the tree populations in communities. As we've gotten emerald ash borer, that's taken off. We've got certainly a lot more emerald ash borer outbreaks, and we're aware of it. We've also had gypsy moth, and we're still hearing about Asian longhorn beetles. There are other insects, too, that we may not know about yet or other parts of the country are dealing with, like hemlock woolly adelgid on the East Coast.
That's slow.
Hemlock woolly adelgid.
Okay, thank
you. It's basically a fluffy white little bug, kind of
right.
cute. It kills hemlocks, which we very rare around here, but is a big deal.
In places where they grow hemlocks.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So,
like the Pacific Northwest, I'd say they'd be terrified of a bug like that.
Right. It's on the East Coast right now, but
yeah.
Of course all these things move.
They move.
Yeah, they definitely move.
Japanese beetle is another one.
Japanese beetle is another one.
We mm-hmm. think of it in terms of our rose bushes, but it loves some trees like lindens.
Sure. And we just had something called elm flea weevil that appeared about 3 years ago out of the blue. And we weren't, every time this happens, entomologists have to dig around and say, what is this thing? Why is it here? And then now we think about what that does. Now, elm flea weevil doesn't kill trees, but what's just the point is that it's a global economy. You know, we're with us.
Is that the one that takes the little chunks out of the elm leaves?
Yeah, a lot of little holes
leaves?
In the leaves.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of little holes, and people go, oh okay. Let's go to Fran real quick. Hey, Fran, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
He's back. You started talking about trees, so I figured you were off on a new subject, so I, sort of walked on you.
That's okay, buddy.
Listen, the previous guest was talking about milkweed specifically, plants in general. A lot of these cultivars are just not nearly as attractive to insects as the species form. And the species form is, especially of the milkweeds, I grow hundreds of them on my patio every year. I've got them in my on a little plot that I'm converting back to you know, to, you know, natural
sure.
conditions. And you can get these seeds, as he did, from railroad embankments, or you can get them from seed houses. Just go to Chicago Wilderness or Wild Ones. They'll be more than willing to help you get these seeds. And they germinate easily, and you can multiply them madly and give them to your friends. Again, the problem is that a lot of these cultivars just do not attract insects. They're bred to look good, but not they don't look good to insects' eyes.
Well, you know, that's actually a really interesting question that I want to have on this show. I've been thinking about this for 6 months now, and I haven't really gotten all the right people together to do it. But I want to have a debate about what's a native and what's not a native. And, okay, for instance, let's look at bee balm or Monarda.
Yep.
There, you know, there's Monarda didymi, and there's what's the Fistulosa is yeah. is the native form. And the cultivars, they breed them so they don't get as much powdery mildew and that sort of thing. Now, are they less viable for insects? And that's a question that even the people who are native experts aren't really sure about. Am I wrong about this, Edith?
No, I think you're right. I don't know that you can necessarily assume across the board that cultivars are going to be less appealing to insects, but there may be when you're sort of choosing and selecting the genetics the way you want, there may be some variation that messes it up in terms
and
of relationship.
And let's explain exactly what a cultivar is, because I'm sure there's people listening go, what are they talking about? I'm not going to have the exact right language, but or maybe Fran, you want to tell me what a cultivar is?
No, I would suggest that you know if you really want to talk to us, yes, call up the folks at Wild Ones or
sure.
Chicago Wilderness.
Well, no, I've had them on the show before, this is something that you're right, and I'm glad you reminded me these organizations for people to. Call and get these seeds from. They're fabulous, Wild Ones, and that's forwild.org. It's for-wild.org. And
also Nature Conservancy.
Yes, Nature Conservancy, absolutely. There's a lot of great organizations out there. Now, I do know that some people are impatient mm-hmm. and they want the plant. They don't want to grow a seed, you know. That's why I was trying to help them with a place where they could get it right away, because some people want something right away. By the way, the definition of cultivar that I've got on the web here is a variety of plant developed from a natural species and maintained under cultivation. Well, that makes... and then sometimes it's called a cultivar is a cultivated plant that has been selected and given a unique name because of its decorative or useful characteristics. Etc., etc. A cultivated variety of a plant species or a hybrid of two species. So these are all different definitions of cultivar.
And if I can just pipe in on that one, cultivar, they can occur naturally. I mean, a hybrid is also a cultivar, but once we find some qualities that red maple, silver maple is a perfect example. Red maple, silver maple crosses naturally, and that comes out as a Freeman maple, which is now highly adapted to planting throughout the Chicagoland area. When we find a particular plant that we really like and we propagate it, through cuttings or whatever, which is technically cloning, that we maintain the characteristics that we've chosen and that we like. Again, does that necessarily mess up its relationship with insects? It probably could. I don't know how much it's been studied or if there's clear answers on all of them. But what they do is they allow for plants, particularly when it comes to woody plants, to grow where we either types of trees, for the example, the elm. We would have lost the elm, and we are losing the American elm. But to lose the genus of elm, we now have varieties, and we also have cultivars. These are types of American elms that were selected for their resistance to Dutch elm disease that we can now plant. So we would lose elms otherwise. I mean, are ash going that direction?
Well, that's sort of an emergency situation where if you're going to lose the plant altogether.
Sure.
I mean, we might end up doing the same thing with our ash trees, is finding a cultivar that will be able to withstand the attack of the emerald ash borer. And that might be the only way. I mean, our chestnuts, they've found new cultivars of chestnut that will grow. We basically lost chestnuts in America.
The American chestnut,
The
right.
American chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, Fran, the point is, you're right that we need to plant more natives because they're going to support our insects.
Our native insects.
Our native insects.
Hallelujah.
And that's the whole point of Doug Tallamy's book. Have you read Doug Tallamy's book, Fran?
No.
You should. It's called Bringing Nature Home. And you should look it up immediately because that's his whole argument, which is that if we don't plant native plants, our native insects are going to go away. And if our native insects go away, so yeah. are our birds and mammals.
Yeah, they've co-evolved over millennia.
Exactly. You're very smart, Fran. I appreciate that. Hey, listen, do you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine?
You know, I called in a couple weeks ago about something else, and I think they got my information. And
you should get it soon, then.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you calling back, Fran.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking to Edith Macra here on the Mike Novak Show, who is the Community Trees Advocate for the Morton Arboretum. And the conference... As we talked about, is going to be at the Morton Arboretum this week, and it's co-sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, right?
Mm-hmm, correct. And Purdue University and the Nature Conservancy.
Oh, great. So they're all involved in that. You know, how do I don't even know where to start with exotic invasives. I mean, there are so many things that seem to be a problem. We chatted very briefly the other day. I said, well, at least we don't have Asian longhorn beetle anymore. And you said, au contraire.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
What's happened with that?
Well, see, Asian longhorn beetle was kind of the first one, I think, that really woke us up in the Chicagoland area to the threat of invasives. And the Asian longhorn beetle, if people aren't familiar with that, is a huge and really beautiful insect, but it's really giant and in your face. I think it's about an inch and a half long, black and white, big shiny bug. And the damage that it leaves are big giant holes in the trees. The hole is about the size of a dime. So it was something that we caught in Chicago many years ago and got on top of. We lost, I think, 1,400 trees total in the Chicago area. What that did is, you know, it brought agencies together and it showed us how to work together, taught us some lessons about how to manage it, how to work with residents that are going to be losing trees.
And when you look at it, the number of trees we lost was not very large, considering what it could have been.
Sure.
And what it was in New York City, for example.
Exactly. And it's a slow, as my favorite entomologist, Phil Nixon, said, it's a big, slow, stupid insect. And so it was a good test for us to learn to manage. So we could keep up with it. The emerald
not only big, slow, and stupid, but very brightly colored.
Very brightly colored.
It's like, how dumb can you be? Hey, I'm here in the tree. Hey.
Okay, careful, because my friends in Massachusetts are going to be a little offended by that. So anyway, we got on top of this insect here. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. And then we got emerald ash borer. And now we've been dealing with emerald ash borer, which is a fast and insidious insect, and we can't see it.
And tiny.
And bashful. So it's doing all kinds of damage, and we really can't see that it's there until the tree is dying. So that's kind of our big issue in the Midwest, and our emerald ash borer infestations have just exploded. So we have... I've lost track of how many confirmed communities we have.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago we were saying it was, well, as each one came out, it was a big deal. Now it's, all right, there's another one. And folks, you're going to lose ash trees.
Right.
It's just...
It's
going to happen.
It's here, and we're finding little pockets of it spreading. You know, we still have time to get prepared and manage, and that's what the conference is about, is sort of looking at the management aspect of these issues.
And there are treatments. Okay, I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you right at the get-go,
mm-hmm.
what preventive treatments can people do? I mean, there are now companies out there that say, we can protect your ash tree. Can
right.
they?
Yes. You know, the experts were a little more cautious in sort of the early days of the infestation because it doesn't seem like it's going to work on any large scale in the long term, which we still maintain. But on the other hand, if it's your ash tree and you have the resources to treat your ash tree, it's worth doing.
So there are chemicals that you can use.
There are chemicals you can use. There was a new one that came out about 2 years ago, and it's being sold under the name Triage. Which has been shown to be quite effective. That's something that a professional should apply. And that's done. The chemicals are systemic. The plants take them up into their tissue, which is where the emerald ash borer larva is. So at the time an emerald ash borer larva or an egg would hatch and begin to feed, the insecticide is there, and the insect doesn't have a chance to mature. It dies.
Is that the best treatment now? Because I heard there were also treatments of imidacloprid.
Imidacloprid is another option, and it's also effective. That can be injected by a professional. It's a little less expensive. It's also one that can be done by homeowners as a soil drench treatment.
All right. Is there any connection between using imidacloprid and bee loss?
I am not aware of that. Again, what I'm hearing from the entomologist is that imidacloprid it binds into the soil, so it's actually pretty hard for the tree to take it up. It's not all that mobile, which makes it a safer chemical to use. Of course, if you have problems with chemicals, then there are just, I think, issues in terms of tinkering with a system. If you're comfortable with pesticides, this, and you've got a tree that you love and it's going to die otherwise, this is an occasion to use it. And if you're not comfortable with it...
The point is, you don't know that it's going to die because these are preventive treatments.
Right.
You don't know that your tree is going to get emerald ash borer, although if it's in an area that has emerald ash borer, you can be pretty certain it will.
It kind of depends, and this is a matter of sort of taking care of your own tree versus what we're dealing with is what communities can do. And on the large scale in the long term, it's not something that can work.
Because that's a good point. I'm talking about individuals, but again, you in this conference this Tuesday and Wednesday are looking at strategies for communities and large scale,
exactly.
Municipalities, yeah.
And I like to use the example of sort of my own situation. I live in northwest suburbs, and the subdivision I'm in is probably about 40% ash. And in my front yard, I have a green ash tree is split from the day I moved in. It drops 5 big limbs every year, and I really don't like the tree. I've already planted a native white oak under, and it's going to go when it's time.
So you've been drilling holes and putting in emerald ash borer, haven't you?
I've been watching very carefully, and I was willing to let it be a test tree.
Yeah.
But my mother, who is 80, I moved her around the corner from me, and she has a beautiful garden, which is the joy of her life, and she's out there every day, and there is one shade tree in that garden plot, mm-hmm. and it's a green ash tree. So that's a tree that is important. It's a solid tree. It is one that I would treat, whereas mine is on the north side of the house. It's not particularly functional in terms of conserving me energy, as I'm going to let it go. And that's kind of a microcosm of what communities can and should do in terms of managing this. So even individuals should decide,
But in terms of communities and individuals, mm-hmm. it's financial.
It's financial, exactly. It's a matter, and even though, you might say, well, if you've got the resources for it, is that the best investment on a large scale? You know, is that the way we should be spending money to keep trees alive that will never, there's not an end in sight to emerald ash borer. So this is something that's going to be, it'll be something you need to do over the long term.
Well, I know you've been following the treatment, what people are looking for to control emerald ash borer, including biological controls, mm-hmm. but those are years away, aren't they?
We had a test release. We had two test releases in Chicago, and I understand, this is scientific research, and this is the culmination of 4 years of it, and I was not at the actual release, but it's apparently as involved as a to-go container from salad dressing, that little styrofoam thing that you would take home from a restaurant full of little tiny bugs, and the scientist came out and tapped it on the tree, and boom, that's it. So by the time those tiny insects the size of a sesame seed, by the time that population really gets established, if it gets established, we're looking at, many years down the road. So that's not something that...
Why can't they bring more little boxes of...
Because
we have to
test them and know how it's going to all work.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, we got to know a little bit.
Oh, come on. Let's just unleash some more exotic insects on America. I think this is a good thing. It's not.
Why
we got
not?
So many already.
We're a melting pot. Come on.
A melting pot for insects. That's Edith Macra from the Morton Arboretum. We're talking about a conference at the Morton Arboretum. Called Coping with the Costs, and it's right in the title, Coping with the Costs, the Economic, Social, and Environmental Impact of Invasive Insects of Our Communities. You briefly said that they've had a new outbreak of Asian longhorn beetle in Massachusetts.
Exactly.
While we were making fun of the big, dumb, stupid, slow, very visible insect, the people in Massachusetts kind of lost track of it, huh?
My old friend from Massachusetts, who's the city forester for Brookline, Massachusetts, gave me a quick, urgent call this morning telling me how many trees had been lost. So my apologies to Tom Brady out there for...
He's not listening. It doesn't matter.
That you guys... And oddly enough, I was the state urban forestry coordinator in Massachusetts, but I left 7 years ago, so I don't think this one was on my watch. But it's, boy, what a lesson. You think you're ahead of it.
How many trees did they lose?
They have confirmed 16,356 trees infested, and they have removed, which is even more remarkable because when you're managing, this is different strategies for different insects, is with Asian longhorn beetle, it has a broad palate. So it likes a lot of different trees, and so there are high-risk host trees. Ash trees are different. It's very insidious. We have a lot of ash trees, but it's just ash. Asian longhorn beetle likes a lot of different trees, and so there are high-risk host trees. Favorite trees So they have to take, if it's in close proximity to a known infested trees, they have to take out these high-risk host trees to help drop the population. 26,606 trees removed in a 66-square-mile area.
For Asian longhorn beetle, for the big, dumb, slow, very obvious.
Very hungry, damaging insect.
Yeah, well, see, this is why vigilance is necessary. Well, I need to stick around here. I need to get Steve Pincusby on the phone. Earl called. Earl, I'm not going to be able to get to your call today because I'm so far behind and I got so much scheduled here. Write me or call me next week. I think I'll have more time to handle that, and I apologize for that. We will get back to Edith and to Steve in just a second. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and now through October 3rd, you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 30% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, fall garden mums are just $2.50 each when you buy four. You'll also save up to 50% off all remaining nursery stock and Sid's entire stock of perennials. Is buy one, get one free. Now is the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs. SIDS has a huge selection available in all value packs of bulbs, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more are just $8.99 each. Visit SIDSonline.com to download the coupon for free plant food with your bulb purchase. Yes, I said free plant food with your bulb purchase. And also for details on SIDS Fall Pond Seminar, and that's coming up in a few weeks. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and sale packs back to SIDS for recycling.
Conserve energy. Save money. Think CETA. Tip 1. Turn your computer off every night and when you're on vacation to reduce energy costs. Tip 2. Charging adds charges. After charging, unplug cell phones, iPods, and other battery-operated devices. You may be eligible through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for home weatherization at no cost to you. For more information, call CETA at 1-800-571-CEDA. Or visit CETAorg.net.
See, when we do commercials on this show, it's just, you know, it's not like Awake with Jake where you got that little block and you go, oh, yeah, we started that whole block. No. I weave them in and out. So it's
Jessica, you're crafty.
I am crafty. You got to pay attention. See, Jessica's supposed to write down the times and she's lost.
I'm not.
Totally lost at the moment. This is a commercial, but it's a good one and for a great product. I don't know if you caught the show the other week when I was offering a prize to one of my listeners. Her comment was, I want an Ecolon. Now, she didn't say it exactly like that, but she wouldn't settle for anything but Ecolon, and I know why. Ecolon doesn't need to be fertilized, and once established, will rarely need water. It's a blend of 7 fine fescues. That is what I call envirological. Ecolon grows slowly, so you don't have to mow it often or ever, if you choose. And right now, and through the end of October, you can get a 10% discount on Ecolon if you use the special code for the Mike Novak Show. Just go to www.eco-lawn.com and enter the code MN909. That's MN909. www.eco-lawn.com. Code MN909. Wow, the time goes fast here on the Mike Novak Show. Let's quickly bring in Steve Pincusby from Safer Pest Control. How you doing, Steve?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. You guys got a number of doings coming up. One this week is the, speaking of beneficial insects, the Ladybug Bash, which is your annual event to provide funds for Safer Pest Control Project. Tell me about the Ladybug Bash, Steve.
Well, it's our 15th anniversary, and we're having that at Space in Evanston. It's really cool music venue. They're putting us up, and it's going to be great. We're going to have food, drinks, pizza from Union Restaurant in Evanston. of the Steve Schneck Trio. $65 per person in advance, $75 at the door, and it goes to a great cause. It helps us continue to promote alternatives, more effective alternatives, more importantly, to the use of pesticides. So,
you know, which and you guys do it. We've talked on the show about lawn care. We've talked about bed bugs making a resurgence. How's that the bed bug situation? Have you had a lot of people contact you about that?
We had a workshop back in July, I believe, the end of July, and we had over 60 people attend. We had folks from dormitories at universities. We had hotel people. We had large property managers show up. So it's definitely on people's minds. And we are trying to work with the city to kind of roll out something citywide, a public education campaign, if you will, because as I like to tell everyone, bed bug management really is people management, and that's the key to getting them under control.
Yeah. And by the way, all this information, there's a link to the Safer Pest Control Project, a link to the Ladybug Bash. It's on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And the other thing I've got up there, and you and I have talked about before, and you've got more coming up, natural lawn care basics for homeowners this week. And, you know, I encourage people to get on the natural lawn care bandwagon. You sent me this great link to an amazing story that ran in the New York Times this week. And it's up on my website right at the bottom of this week's show. And it's about how Harvard has gone organic with their lawn. And it's made a huge difference. I was just amazed. I think for anybody who, you know, questions the value of an organic program, read that story in the New York Times. Just go to that link and read how, you know, because Harvard University is a place where people, they trample the lawn and they compact the soil and they started using compost tea and compost and they can plant stuff. I mean, it's not all hard pan. It's just remarkable, and that's just the start of it, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, and I mean, they're growing lawn, they're growing it better. They've gone from compacted soils with 2 to 3 inch root depth on the turf grasses to aerated soils with 8 inch just using compost and compost tea. And another favorite, which I just heard you mention a few moments ago, they're using fescues on their lawn. They're overseeding with fescues because they're more drought, they're more shade tolerant, and they're just a hardier species.
Right, and you know about EcoLawn. That is a blend of fescues, and that's the whole idea, is to use these species of grass. If you're going to have turf grass, you know, and I say about lawns, when in doubt, rip it out, but if you need to have that, go for something that's going to last. It's not going to be as whiny as Kentucky bluegrass and is needy and subject to diseases and wilts under compaction, you know, because people like their lawns. They want to use them sometimes.
Yeah.
Steve and I are actually working together on a project longer term to teach sustainable landscape management to homeowners associations, which are just one of the biggest land managers in suburbia. And we're having a lawn care workshop for the homeowners association managers. And so, Steve, we're growing a patch of eco lawn at the Arboretum to have out as a demonstration for this workshop that we'll be doing in November.
That's right. The Morton Arboretum has gotten on the eco lawn bandwagon, mm-hmm. too, which mm-hmm. is just fabulous. And it's also on my website, Steve. I said natural lawn care basics for homeowners, which is this, what is that, is Wednesday, September 30th from 7 to 9 at the Evanston Ecology Center. And it's free, isn't it?
It's free to all. You can go to our website, and we just ask that people pre-register or they're just welcome to show up. It'll be great. It'll be about an hour and a half long. We've got homeowners are always, I would say, my most interested audience. I think they get it. They're, you know, they're tired of putting, you know, pounds and pounds of fertilizer and pesticides only to see the lawn kind of struggle throughout the growing season. So they're looking for alternatives, and with sort of the natural organic lawn care, you don't have to compromise appearance. You can still maintain a good, aesthetically pleasing lawn without having to do nearly as much work to it. That's win-win for everyone.
It is, and then I don't know if this is what you were talking about, Edith, on November 13th, you have natural lawn care for community associations.
That's
from 9 a.m. to noon at the Morton Arboretum, November 13th, and obviously, as you said, Edith, they control a lot of the turf.
A lot of landscape, and they're doing things very unsustainably in dealing with their landscape in general.
And you find that these community associations, they're terrified to vote anything but traditional methods. You know, they don't want to try anything new, and they think it doesn't work, but it does work. And that's why all these community associations need to read the New York Times story this week and see what Harvard's been doing. Don't you think, Steve?
I would agree. I mean, it's a great place to start. And when it comes to the community associations, I mean, there's places for turf. And let's face it, in our suburbs and our communities, we're very turf-centric. But you don't need turf going right up to the edge of your pond in a lot of cases. And there's different ways of growing turf to minimize its impact and make it a more harmonious aspect of the total landscape. That's kind of what the community associations workshop is all about.
Or to the edge of your tree. You don't need it there either. You know, because that's just, now you've got your tree competing with the lawn, and they both lose, really, because the lawn gets shaded out and the tree loses nutrients from the lawn. It's a lose-lose proposition when you plant lawn right up to the base of a tree.
Anyone who's ever tried to grow turf underneath a maple knows just how difficult it is. It's probably not the best use of that area under the tree.
Before I let you go, I got to tell you something. I just found out the other day that I'm doing this couple of garden talks up at a conference in Wisconsin in January, and Paul Tukey from safelawns.org is the keynote, and then they've got me doing a lawn care seminar right after he speaks, an organic lawn care seminar, and I'm terrified. I mean, he is God when it comes to organic lawn care. I speak for his organization, safelawns.org, but he's doing the keynote, and then I know what's going to happen. He's going to come and sit in on my presentation, and Steve, I'm going to need some more pointers from you because I don't want him in the audience. Let's get him out of there.
Yeah, but Mike, you sing, right? You've got multi-talents.
I will tap dance as well.
Use them all.
I will do the tap dancing organic lawn care method.
He's a tough act to follow, but we'll get you up to speed. Don't worry about him.
All right, and we're going to be showing his new movie. I'm sorry, what's the name of it, Steve?
It's called The Chemical Reaction.
Right.
And yeah, we're going to try to get a screening here locally in the Chicagoland area.
You and I are going to work to get a chemical reaction here in Chicago. It's about how they banned pesticides in lawns in Canada, in parts of Canada, and I think people in the United States need to see it. I got to let you go, but we'll talk soon, and if you want all the information on Ladybug Bash this coming Friday, October 2nd from 7 to 10 at Space in Evanston, it's online. Also, the Natural Lawn Care Basics for Homeowners and Community Associations. It's all at MikeNovak.net or Safer Pest Control Project, SPCPweb.org. I'll talk to you soon, Steve.
Hey, Mike, don't forget our professional workshop on the 5th that we're co-hosting with Mila and Ilka at Cantini.
Oh, that's right. And the date of that?
That is November 5th. That will be at Cantini. It's a day-long workshop for professionals. So whether you're a turf person with the school district, park district, you manage a property, or you own your own business, this is a great opportunity to learn about all that information, including projects like this Harvard project.
All right, great. It's all on the website. Take care, Steve. Talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks, Mike.